Governor Kristi Noem pushes her sports agenda forward and goes after rapper Lil Nas X. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Wednesday, it's March 31st, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, the Dakota Political Junkies convene for an update on state political headlines. We'll ask if the governor has her sights set on the appropriate targets, or if a series of missteps is causing her national profile to tarnish. We talk with Dr. Andrew Ellsworth about taking care of your health during wildfire season, including how to prepare for an evacuation if you have medical needs. Eliza Blue searches for the first robins and meadowlarks of the season. Plus, Dakota Life heads to Mitchell, and we preview the spring high school athletic season that's coming later in the hour. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
With SDPB News, I'm John Wynn. The Schroeder fire near Rapid City has grown slightly, but officials say some residents could return to their homes starting today. As SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports, the fire is around 50% contained.
Officials estimate the Schroeder fire has now reached 2,100 acres. The fire began Monday morning on private property. Officials know where the fire started, but are still investigating the cause. Closures and evacuations remain in effect as officials reevaluate areas that have been burned. Rob Powell is the incident commander for the Schroeder Fire. He says they have containment near the Westbury Trail subdivision in Pinedale Heights, which is part of the western border of the city. Powell says crews still have some work to do before allowing folks to return home. He also says crews will turn their focus to protecting structures in Cleghorn Canyon.
There's still fire backing down into the canyon. We're feeling good with security on the rest of the portions on the fire. But like we say, we still have hazards out there that we need to mitigate before we just allow people to go back in.
The fire is aided by wind, drought, and low humidity. Winds are expected to die down and temperatures should drop. That will give crews a chance to further contain the fire. There are fires popping up across western South Dakota and the Black Hills this spring. That concerns Governor Kristi Noem.
It is really early to be doing this, so we're probably one of the first in the nation this year for 2021 facing this kind of a situation. And nationwide, some of the resources that would normally be available to us during firefighting season just weren't set up yet because it is so early in the year. But I think our response has been outstanding considering that situation.
The state is in drought conditions that climate officials say could expand without more rain or snow. Meteorologists expect South Dakota to see above average temperatures until June. Mount Rushmore remains closed as a wildfire there has reached 117 acres and is about 30% contained. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
The state is targeting nearly $70 million to update and improve water, wastewater, and solid waste systems. Mike Perkovich directs environmental funding for the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. He says the money improves existing infrastructure for several cities, cooperatives, and businesses.
A lot of our projects tend to be line replacement projects. You know, the sewer line's 50, 60 years old and leaking, and so they need to replace that, or the water lines are old cast iron that's experiencing breaks. It seems like a lot of our projects are line replacement projects.
Perkovich says some cities use funding to upgrade water towers or treatment facilities. Other projects can include cleanup efforts. The DENR funds water and wastewater grants and loans annually. The money comes from state fees, lotto ticket sales, and the state legislature. A judge in Rapid City has granted a 90-day extension to the defense attorney of a man accused of murdering three people last year to be notified whether prosecutors will seek the death penalty. 36-year-old Arnson Absolu, a New York City man, is charged with three counts of premeditated first-degree murder for a series of alleged murders in August. His defense attorney asked the judge for the extension so he could investigate the circumstances that may mitigate a death penalty sentence and meet with prosecutors. Absolu has pleaded not guilty to the charges. For today's weather, we're seeing sunny skies. For SDPB News, I'm John Wynn.
And I'm Lori Walsh. Congressman Dusty Johnson has been in South Dakota this week as well. He's visited with engineers in Mitchell, helped break ground for a bridge project between Pierre and Fort Pierre, and he checked in on first responders fighting the Schroeder Fire near Rapid City. SDPB's Chris Lawfrey caught up with Representative Johnson this morning.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, responded quickly to South Dakota's request for assistance in fighting this week's fires. What difference does that kind of quick response mean for the ability of the first responders to do their jobs?
Well, it doesn't really help the first responders very much because those men and women just go out and do what they do, and they don't worry about the back-end costs. What it does do is it should make South Dakota and the local governments feel confident that from a cost-sharing perspective, the federal government's going to be a partner in this, and I do think that's important.
Congressman Johnson, you were able to see those first responders at work trying to contain the fires. What were your thoughts about the operation?
I think it's incredibly smooth. I mean, I don't want to call myself an expert, but, you know, when I was with state government, it was often the case that I was providing leadership in an incident command center and helping to respond to whether it was flooding or blizzards, ice events. And so I have a sense of what looks organized and operationally strong and what doesn't. And I've got to tell you know, the response to these fires is strong. I mean, we've got incredibly dedicated professionals in the field and in the command center. They have trained for this. They have practiced for this. When you've got the kinds of wind-driven events that we have out there, a lot of this is beyond their control. But everything that they can control, they're doing a really good job with. There are literally a couple dozen agencies involved in this response, and the coordination has been incredible.
Now, you now serve on the Congressional Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. If you could, Congressman Johnson, talk about President Joe Biden's Build Back Better initiative and how that could impact South Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, infrastructure, things like highway bills, have been an incredibly strong bipartisan area for action. In fact, every highway bill has passed on a strong bipartisan vote. The most recent five-year highway bill, the price tag was $305 billion, and that was a much-needed investment in America's, you know, bridges and roads and waterways. Was a really good bipartisan victory. Well, you know, the president's not calling for a $300 billion plan. He's talked about a $4 trillion plan, mm-hmm. or 13 times more money than the last highway bill. Now, I think he's defining infrastructure a lot more broadly. I think he's kind of throwing everything in the infrastructure bucket. But we still, I mean, at some point, all of this is borrowed money from the Chinese. And I think we want to make sure that what we're doing is targeted, and it is going to be an appropriate role for the government. It is going to help the economy remain strong and help us build forward for the future. I am honestly a little concerned about the price tag, but I'm sure we're going to be looking into that.
That leads into my next thought. Let's move to U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. He says there are trillions, as you alluded to, of dollars of U.S. infrastructure projects in need of attention. Now, do you think there is room for bipartisan partnerships regarding infrastructure funding?
Oh, there absolutely is, room for bipartisan support. I mean, not at the price tag that the president or Secretary Buttigieg are talking about. And this is part of the reason why a lot of us were arguing for a more targeted COVID relief package. Of course, we needed to invest in vaccines and testing, and I voted for those sorts of packages in the future. The most recent package, the $2 trillion one, spent dollars in areas where they were not as much needed and were not targeted. And those dollars would have been better targeted in areas like highways and bridges where we know we can get a really strong return and we can help create private sector jobs and raise people out of poverty. So there is some bipartisan ground to be found, provided that the administration is willing to work with us on targeting those dollars.
My last thought today, Congressman Dusty Johnson, you also visited your hometown of Mitchell, South Dakota, and talked with engineers and concrete workers. What insight did you learn from them?
Yeah, one of the things I love about being in Congress is that I am able to split my time between, you know, what, 50% D.C. and 50% South Dakota. People assume that's a downside to the job. But for me, I think you got to be in D.C. sometimes to cut these deals face-to-face with your colleagues. But I also love being back every single weekend in Mitchell, where my family lives, and in other communities. And when I'm talking to these workers, I mean, they make it clear, and they want an economy that continues to move forward. These are good jobs. These are jobs that you can raise a family on, and they know that when the American economy is going strong, that is incredibly good news for working class folks. And so they just told me to you know, not mess it up. I mean, let's make sure that we don't let this partisan rancor lock everything up in D.C.
That's Congressman Dusty Johnson talking with SDPB's Chris Loffrey. Representative Johnson spoke with SDPB this morning. Up next, a reminder to pack your prescription medicine in case of evacuation. We talk wildfires and your health with Dr. Andrew Ellsworth on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
With the way this pandemic hit this economy, which was fast, not all of our indicators were able to keep up.
I'm looking at all the normal financial and economic data, but the concern about that in this crisis is that by the time you get the data, it's stale.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, High Frequency Data, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding is provided by SDN Communications. 50,000 miles of resilient broadband fiber supporting online banking and other essential businesses right where you need it. More at sdncommunications.com.
Imagine a South Dakotan who cares about current events and education, who contributes their time and money to help make their community a better place to live. You've just imagined a listener of SDPB. If your company needs to reach well-educated, loyal customers, please consider becoming an underwriter. SDPB is a trusted source, and your company message doesn't have to be loud or long to get attention here. Our listeners will notice you. Email us, underwrite@sdpb.org, to get started.
Program funding is provided by Denny Menholt Auto Group, Rapid City. During this time, we are here and ready to serve you, still providing the same quality service you've come to expect. Doing our part to keep you safe at Denny Menholt Auto Group, Rapid City.
Health reporting on SDPB is supported by Monument Health.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Are you prepared for fire season in South Dakota? What challenges do wildfires in the state offer people with compromised breathing? Dr. Andrew Ellsworth is a family medicine physician with Avera Medical Group in Brookings, and he's a member of the On Call with the Prairie Doc team. He joins us with insight on that and with a look at this week's Ask Anything program of On Call with the Prairie Doc. Dr. Ellsworth, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori. Always a pleasure.
I want to start with some basic reminders for people who live near the wildfires about preparing for evacuation. If that is your situation and you have medical needs or prescription medicines, what do you sort of need to think through as far as preparing for the potential of an emergency evacuation?
Yeah, you know, it really helps to get a checklist and get prepared ahead of time. You know, if you wait till they want you to evacuate, you know, you don't have near as much time. The important thing is just to get out of there then. And so, you know, thinking about this ahead of time and packing what you need. And, you know, a simple Google search will give you a good list. You know, making sure you have your medication, making sure you've got your glasses or a first aid kit or flashlight and your cash or credit cards that you need. You know, maybe some food for at least a couple days worth, and for sure water. You know, we can go without food for a few days if needed, but we need water. We need to stay hydrated. So having some water ahead of time is a good idea as well. Having some sanitation supplies, toilet paper, all those things, you know, any important things packed ahead of time. Just, you know, just like if you were going to have a baby and you had your bag packed to go to the hospital, have your bag packed to leave the house in emergency if needed.
Yeah, and some people just go stay with friends or at a hotel and are able to return home, you know, very quickly. But we are doing all of this during a pandemic that has not released its grip on us entirely. So bring those masks and that hand sanitizer and those sanitizing wipes as well, right? Yeah.
You've got it. You know, and the mask is going to be helpful for you if there's smoke in the air, too.
Yeah.
Those irritants in the air from whatever's burning can really be hard on a person, whether you have lung disease or not. And so there's an extra benefit of those masks. It is something where if someone has a history of lung disease, the fires when they're going on, they can really notice it. Even if you can't really see or smell a difference in the air, we do see sometimes people having more problems with breathing problems, especially if they have a history of lung disease.
Yeah. So for people with that lung disease or compromised breathing or asthma, the fires can affect them from California, from Canada, you know, depending on the wind and the weather. What are some of the things that you need to know if you know already that you have a chronic problem and that the air quality has changed?
Yeah, you know, ahead of time, make sure you have an up-to-date rescue inhaler. It's usually an albuterol inhaler. And those usually just for use as needed, aren't usually meant for everyday use, but for when something like this happens, you might notice a little more shortness of breath or wheezing. And so then those inhalers can be helpful, especially if you're really having trouble breathing. But the rescue inhaler isn't meant for everyday use. So if you're using something like that every day, it's good to get in and see a doctor about maybe getting on a steroid inhaler or another type of inhaler, or maybe even steroid pill medication to help the lungs open up, help you breathe better. Some people use steroid inhalers all year long, and sometimes some people just use them in, you know, cold and flu season or winter or when their allergies are going to be worse and have more trouble breathing then. And so making sure that's up to date and ready to be used in case you need it too.
We're also entering for many people who are allergic to trees, or I think it's a little early for grass, but especially if you're allergic to trees, you're starting to notice some of those seasonal spring allergies. Again, watching for COVID symptoms, and again, perhaps having some troubles, depending on where you live and what your activities are with breathing because of wildfires. Talk a little bit about sorting through allergies versus COVID versus an environmental irritant. And when do you call your doctor because you think this might not be allergies, this probably is something that's a little bit worse?
Yeah, you know, certainly in the past, it was a little more clear. COVID, you know, has made it more complicated. And our numbers have been going up in the area lately with COVID. And so for allergies, you know, typically it's kind of that runny nose, watery eyes, itchy eyes type symptoms. And, you know, trying an over-the-counter allergy pill might be helpful. Also, if it's been going on for at least a month or more, it's more likely allergies and it's that time of year every year for you, you know, trying a loratadine or Claritin, which are some of the generic names for some of the over-the-counter allergy pills, certainly might be helpful, just a once-a-day thing. Steroid nasal sprays can also be helpful when it's mostly just in the nose, kind of the runny nose, and you feel it in the back of your throat, and it gives you that tickle cough and such. Mm-hmm. So for allergies, those things can be helpful to try. Now, if it's just started, you know, it could be a cold, otherwise too, some other viral illness, but then again, it could be COVID too. There's certainly been plenty of people, and thankfully majority of people, that if they have COVID, it might only be mild symptoms. To know to help protect the others around you and for knowledge for yourself too, in case you need treatment earlier, getting tested, and we have plenty of tests now for COVID available for people, and to know that early on so that you can take precautions, it can be really a good idea.
Yeah, and you can still order those at-home COVID tests. Go to covid.sd.gov for information on how to do that. Dr. Andrew Ellsworth is a family medicine physician with the Vera Medical Group in Brookings. He's a member of the On Call with the Prairie Doc team, and you can see On Call with the Prairie Doc Thursday nights at 7 Central, 6 Mountain on STPB-TV. You can also find them online at prairiedoc.org. or search Prairie Doc on Facebook, and this week's episode, Ask Anything. So, Dr. Ellsworth, thank you for letting me ask you anything this morning.
You bet. Thank you, Lori. Have a good day.
Ahead on In the Moment, the Dakota Political Junkies look at Governor Kristi Noem's executive orders and a possible special legislative session. You're in the moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
On the next Fresh Air, how giant tech firms led by Amazon are warping the economy and increasing inequality among population centers. ProPublica reporter Alec McGillis says some cities get robust job growth and soaring housing prices, while formerly prosperous areas are left stagnating. His new book is Fulfillment: Winning and Losing in One-Click America. Join us
this afternoon at 2, 1 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by Bank West, a full-service community bank, helping you make the most of your time and money, and being there how, when, and where you want to bank. Bank West. Convenient. Connected. Committed. Member FDIC.
The Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei was well on its way to gaining global dominance in 5G technology, but the Trump administration put an end to that.
Use a sports metaphor, we're in the penalty box, or actually, more likely, we're kind of kicked out of the league for a while.
Will the Biden administration keep the pressure on Huawei? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen, beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain, on SDPB.
Program funding with your support. And by Gene Hufford of American Family Insurance on Jackson Boulevard in Rapid City. Gene and his team working together to serve your needs. Gene Hufford Agency Incorporated. GeneHufford.com.
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again.
What difference at this point does it make?
Don't talk to me that way. You're just a lightweight.
So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
No, 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 no. Hey.
You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Governor Kristi Noem remains in the spotlight due to her executive orders banning transgender athletes from competing on girls' sports teams and for her social media back and forth with rapper Lil Nas X regarding his new song and video, Montero, Call Me By Your Name, and his now sold-out Satan sneakers. The Dakota Political Junkies join us today to talk about the governor's profile in South Dakota and beyond. Pam Caribou is professor of political science at Black Hills State University. Jonathan Ellis is an investigative reporter for Argus Leader Media. Dr. Caribou, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Jonathan Ellis, welcome back.
Hey, Lori. Nothing going on, right? Nothing. Nothing's going on.
Not a thing. And who knew we were going to say Satan sneakers on the air? So that's a new one. But let's start with those executive orders first. So the governor issues two executive orders on Monday designed to limit participation on women's and girls' school sports teams to people assigned female at birth. And that's after failing to convince lawmakers to change House Bill 1217. Jonathan, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Lee Schoenbeck saying it's something that they shouldn't have anything to do with right now. The governor going on national TV, getting challenged by conservative talk show hosts, and sort of taking a bath on this from both sides. Give me an idea of how this this whole notion of transgender athletes, which she says that legislation is not about, how is it playing out here at home and nationwide?
Well, as you indicated, I mean, her too cute by half, I guess, style and form veto of that legislation has really got her in trouble with some conservative groups, and just to and that and not only you know conservative groups necessarily. I mean, some of the polling that I'm aware of on this nationally is like 80-20. I mean, overwhelmingly in support of biological sex being a determinant of what you know people participate in terms of sports. And so, you know, her again, probably unconstitutional or illegal, a style and form veto, which wasn't a style and form veto, really. It was just kind of rewriting the law the way she wanted it, definitely has put her, earned her a lot of animosity among conservatives, and of course, it didn't earn her any, on the other side, it didn't, you know, get her anywhere with people who support, you know, transgender rights in sports. And so she's kind of, she found herself in a real tough spot, which probably at some point led to the Twitter thing that we'll talk about later. But she's national TV on Fox News, getting challenged by the likes of Tucker Carlson, not just one day, but 2 days. That's just not a place where any Republican wants to find themselves being criticized.
Yeah. Pam Caravu, this whole notion of biological sex versus, gender assignment at birth is becoming a national discussion. This fits very well with her base, and it also alienates a whole lot of people if she's looking for votes on the national scale who have a different understanding of gender than she does. Where is she headed with this legislation, do you think?
Well, I think she's trying to, you know, parse this very carefully. She took a look at the law that was actually, the bill that was sent to her, and saw that there really were some problematic elements as far as, you know, just practically. And that's really kind of what she outlines in her her style and form suggestions, right? That she tries to explain why Section 2 has problems, why Section 4 is problematic. So she's trying to be practical in the sense of, you know, what is this going to cost my state if I sign this bill into law, and then we have to deal with the legal challenges. And at the same time, she's very clearly trying to appeal to conservatives across the country. And although I haven't seen I don't know exactly. I haven't seen really up-to-date polling data on this. What I have seen, though, shows that nationally there's a slightly above 50% support for these kinds of bills, but it's only among conservatives that it's like 80-20. That's what I've seen. I don't know. I haven't seen anything terribly recent on it. But I think she's in a tough spot, right? In a sense, I respect that she's looking out for the state as far as, what are the legal implications? What will it cost our state legally if this is challenged? What will it cost our state economically if NCAA pulls out any possible, sporting events that are held in our state? And at the same time, of course, she told us all that she was excited to sign the bill. So so that practicality versus the politics is really, really tripping her up here.
Yeah, which brings us to our next topic, and that is this sort of Twitter battle with a rapper named Lil Nas X. Most people heard his song Old Town Road when it came out. Now he's got a new song, Call Me By Your Name, and a provocative video. And then he sold online these shoes that were called Satan sneakers and had a pentagram and a drop of human blood in it for $1,000. They're customized sneakers. They sold out immediately. Jonathan, why go after him on Twitter and really give him the opportunity to just say, Governor, do your job. You've got better things to talk about than what I'm doing right now. Why does she head in that direction?
Well, I mean, because, look, that is this video, which and this song, but I'd never heard of this rapper, I had not actually heard this song. It's a pretty good song. Heard it today. But
it's in my head. Once you hear it, it gets stuck in your head, just like Old Town Road. Yep.
Old Town Road, yeah. That's the song I guess I'm referring to. I had not heard before. But
you hadn't. Oh, okay.
No, yeah, I guess and people in the newsroom were looking at me like, what is your deal? But anyway.
what rock have you been hiding under?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, yeah, I mean, and going back and looking at his Twitter feed, he'd already been being criticized by, I think, by some other conservatives or whatever. Certainly she got in on that as well, and it is an opportunity, again, going back to what we were talking about, she kind of got crosswise with some of the conservative base. This is kind of bread and butter social conservative stuff where you go after the excesses or whatever of Hollywood. This is the kind of fights that have been taking place between, you know, social conservatives and the media elite, or the actors and actresses or singers, for decades now. So this was an opportunity for her to kind of maybe change the subject a little bit so on the other subjects we were talking about. It's an interesting fight. As the younger people in my newsroom have pointed out, that taking on this guy, Lil Nas X, on Twitter, this is his battlefield. This is where he makes a living here. I mean, so it's actually beneficial for both of them. I mean, he's fighting with her and helping his brand, and she's fighting back, helping her brand. According to the analysis done by my boss, Corey Myers, who was following this on Sunday, and I was blissfully coaching soccer in Kansas City and was unaware of all of this until I got back. But, you know, Corey's point was that, they both win. She gets to win with her base, and he gets to win by, you know, his marketing, his presence on Twitter, and his brand as well.
Yeah, Pam, to Corey's point and Jonathan's point, I think Lil Nas X has like 6 million Twitter followers. Governor Noem has maybe 400,000. I'd have to double check those numbers, but clearly he's got a very strong Twitter presence. Does this help her? Does it hurt her? And specifically, I'm wondering, does it hurt her because it makes it look like she's distracted? You know, she does go directly to the wildfires in South Dakota. She's on the ground as governor for that, but she's also has time. At her press conference about the transgender effort, she talked about how she was looking into this last November, which, of course, was one of our peak months for COVID deaths. Are people going to use the fact that she is taking on these kinds of things that sort of look like, you know, attention grabs or fundraising grabs when she really should be paying attention to business here in South Dakota, like COVID deaths and wildfires and bridges and such? Does it hurt her in that regard at all?
I don't think it does, actually, and it seems like, you know, if we're looking at this and from the outside, it seems like going after Lil Nas X is off topic, but it's not, because he is openly gay, and so to start this fight with him goes back to, again, this idea that we need to protect our children from the LGBTQ agenda, that we're not terribly worried about, you know, I guess the threat to Christianity posed by Lil Nas X, but we might be more worried about him normalizing being gay. And so for her to actually go after him fits right in with this thing that she needs to do to kind of burnish her credentials regarding this transgender issue. So I think it fits in really well, and only helps her in the sense that even today when I was doing research for this this discussion, which, by the way, I hadn't listened to Montero Call Me By Your Name before either, so thank you for doing that for me. But
now it's stuck in your head too.
It is. It's catchy. And again, it's one of those things, as he points out, you know, you take care of your children. I'm not going to let my 9-year-old watch the video, but I'm an adult and I can choose to watch it or not. And it fits right into the personal responsibility message that Christy has been expressing lately. But as I was preparing, I'm Googling news on Christy Noem, transgender And the whole list that comes up is her flip-flopping back and forth. And I actually, that's not fair. She didn't really flip-flop, but the news articles present her as back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. If she can get more attention with this Lil Nas thing and now with the fire, of course, she can push those articles down and get them off the top of our news feed when we're searching her name. And I think that's probably the intent.
Yeah. And as Jonathan said, this is an old tactic. You know, Madonna did Like a Prayer, and Lil Nas X is openly gay. He's a black man. He's from Georgia. He's 21. He's a Gen Z person. And that just sort of makes everything just ready for her, like artists like Madonna or, oh, I don't know, Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion just are it's just ripe to talk about. So,
That's really insightful. I hadn't thought about that, about pushing the search results further down. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think it is too. Well, Dr. Pam Caravu is with Black Hills State University. She's a professor of political science, and Jonathan Ellis is an investigative reporter for Argus Leader Media. You can find his work at argusleader.com. Dr. Caravu, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jonathan, thank you as well.
All right, thanks, Lori.
Well, what do we save in this world, and how do we save it? Eliza Blue brings you her thoughts on this month's Postcard from the Prairie.
Yesterday, the robins returned to our yard. We saw them through the living room window on the western side of the house, a small flock of them flitting between the branches of the tallest ash in the tree break. It was a damp, gray day, and they were far enough away that it was difficult to make out the burnt orange feathers of their breasts, but the plump curves of their bellies and the stuttered swoop of their flight was unmistakable after watching a winter's worth of sparrows. "Let's take the binoculars upstairs and see if we are right," I told the kids, and we tromped up to look. I threw open the window, and the cacophony of robin song filled the room even before we spotted the telltale coloration through the binoculars' lenses. The kids, satisfied, went back down to their Lego table, where they'd been working on a water park that included a hot dog stand and 9 water slides. I stayed to marvel. "Hello, friends," I called out the window. In 2018, Robert McFarlane and Jackie Morris created a children's picture book called The Lost Words. The impetus of the book was the editing of the Oxford Junior Dictionary, which had removed many words used to describe the natural world. Some of them relatively common words, such as acorn, fern, dandelion, gray seal, otter, and kingfisher. The editing body of the OED determined that the excised words were of increasingly less importance to the modern child, and removing them made room for newer words with greater relevance like blog, broadband, database, and voicemail. The editors argued they couldn't include everything, but McFarlane explained what was being lost this way. "We find it hard to love what we cannot give name to, and what we do not love, we will not save." Today, the weather is warm and bright. The robins that gathered beneath the chilly clouds yesterday are scattered across the yard now. We hear them calling from every direction. A giant plume of red-winged blackbirds swoop down to occupy the tall ash, their coarse whistles and trills even louder than the robins' chatter. They move on quickly, though, our tree break merely a short respite in their journey. In a tree by the patio, we see a downy woodpecker skipping along the bark, and then a single goose honks past, so low to the ground we could practically reach up and brush our fingertips over her feathers. "Birds, birds, everywhere," I tell the kids, and they smile at me before returning to draw with chalk on the cement. The one bird we don't hear is the meadowlark, whose bright song is usually how Western Dakotans know that spring has arrived. Their voice is unavoidably ubiquitous once the weather warms. In total, we've lost nearly 3 billion American birds since the 1970s, and the meadowlark population in particular has seen a precipitous decline in the last decade, though their numbers in our region are still strong, or have been. "Where are the meadowlarks?" I whisper aloud, suddenly worried. Evening begins to settle around us. The shadows are long and stark across the first brushes of green, rising softly from the dusty field. The sun, resting just above the horizon, is pure gold. I go out for a run and I am just about to turn back when I hear it. Two long notes followed by a dizzying avalanche of trills. It's a meadowlark. We live surrounded on all sides by a wilderness of grass. Land that, though changed, still looks surprisingly similar to the way it did a millennia ago. And yet my children, children of the prairie winds and grasses, would rather listen to birdsong on YouTube than out in the pasture. Unlike the editors of the OED, I've tried to give them words for both the world of human creation and the world in which humans are simply one voice in a marvelous and ancient symphony. But I fear McFarlane may be wrong. What if the things we name and love, we still don't love enough to save? Perhaps it's time to stop saying those names quietly. Perhaps it is time to start shouting, lest we discover that what we've lost for good.
Eliza Blue is the author of the book Accidental Rancher. You can find her writing and her music on her website at elizablue.net. Nate Wack is with us for a sports and rec update just a bit later in the hour, but first, Dakota Life heads to Mitchell. Larry Rohr joins us for a preview. You are on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Arts, literature, and music reporting on SDPB is supported by the Northern State University School of Fine Arts. More information available at northern.edu.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. The Smithsonian's National Museum of American History is collecting items from the pandemic and from the turbulent year of 2020.
There are some things in a historian's mind where you know you're living through history. You're kind of in the grist mill of history. Like you can feel the gears turning, and we knew this was one of them.
Next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by Rise Custom Solutions, serving all ages with orthotics, prosthetics, and mobility solutions in Sioux Falls and Rapid City, with outreach clinics in eastern South Dakota and northwest Iowa. More at risecs.com.
Thanks to your support, South Dakota Public Broadcasting is able to bring you live coverage of high school sports and fine arts events. We take pride in shining the spotlight on achievements of students in the classroom and on the stage. Support SDPB now and help us continue to offer high school sports championships and all-state music presentations. Donate at sdpb.org/donate.
Program funding is provided by SDN Communications. Even the wireless revolution needs a lifeline, and SDN is happy to provide 50,000 miles of broadband fiber support. More at sdncommunications.com.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh, and the next Dakota Life is hosted from the world's only Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. Larry Rohr is with us for a preview. Welcome back, Larry.
Good to talk to you again, Lori.
I remember going to Girl State when I was in high school, and there was a girl from Mitchell, and she always called it the world's biggest bird feeder, and got a great laugh. So when you're from Mitchell, you know all the jokes.
Well, and that is one of them. That when we get set to have a home base for our Dakota Life show, we reach out to a lot of public broadcasting members in the area. So we had an email exchange with a lot of folks around Davison County and Mitchell, and several of them mentioned that. It's the world's largest bird feeder. It's also a squirrel feeder, too. So they deal with that a little bit when they need to.
It's pride and a sense of humor all wrapped into one. Tell me a little bit about what's ahead for this program.
Well, we're going to take a little trip around the state like we usually do on Dakota Life. Mm-hmm. And
sometimes themes emerge organically. And there's a little bit of a theme about gathering spaces and entertainment spaces in a way. One of our stories is we're going to go just up the James River from Mitchell to Ruskin Park. And Ruskin Park is gone now, but was quite a gathering place for, in the turn of the century, the Chautauqua had a golf course and activities on the Jim River, and became quite a place for the rock bands of the area for the 50s and 60s, even national acts. And that's Ruskin Park was right next to Forestburg. So where you go to get your watermelons, you used to be able to go have a good time.
All things, some things change and some things stay the same. You can still have a good time picking up your watermelon.
We go a little, little further north to visit with and learn about a guy named Leo Weber and talk with his kids. Leo was one of the original creative forces behind what became and is now quite a destination, Storybook Land in Aberdeen. So you're going to learn a little about where some of that theme and some of that creative energy for Storybook Land came from.
Nice. And a little bit of outdoors with taking your poetry outdoors. Tell me a little bit about this. This has to be Kevin Cole, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And it was interesting that we have this story about the USF professor who has his literature class, took it outside last fall and kind of got out in nature. But he talks a little bit about how that can, how being outside in a lot of different weather can kind of help shape how you present that topic in literature, and where he kind of equates it to teachers might go out into nature to study biology. But he said, it can have quite an impact on a more of a fine arts class like literature. But was interesting because about the same time that we had this story come in, we were starting to see all around the country there were a lot of classes that were outside simply because of the pandemic. So you can kind of see a tie in there, but it's an interesting twist on more of a humanities type class.
Yeah. All right. Take me to some of the Mitchell conversation and the Corn Pals conversation. You brought some audio with you. Let's hear some of that.
You know, it's a lot of fun to hear what people have to say about their hometown or a place like the Corn Palace in their hometown. And the point of view, you know, for you and I who don't live there, even being South Dakotans, we think of the Corn Palace in a much different way. And that became clear from the responses we got, but very clear from the manager of the Corn Palace, Doug Greenway, has been in that position for the last year. And he says Mitchell has been improving their park systems and their public spaces, and that's why they have this brand new plaza that's right on the south side of the Corn Palace.
Part of the beautification of Mitchell is part of that was a plaza space. So the summer of 2020, during COVID, we finished that. We have a performance stage. We have a grassy area. We have a shade structure area for people to sit and look at the murals, watch the decorating process. And I really want to make that the town square, if you will. For anything going on Mitchell downtown, it can start at the plaza and go out from there. We actually had our festival stage set there last year, and what a wonderful environment. It was a cool summer evenings. We had live entertainment in our parking lot with the Corn Palace as the backdrop all lit up. It was just a beautiful scene, and we had wonderful weather. So people said we have to have more of those outdoor shows. So
I'm ready for summer.
They closed off the street that was immediately south of the palace and turned it into this gathering spot, and it really fits in. And we heard some comments last week on the air from Doug about the kind of the hometown feel and the role that the palace plays downtown. Some of the people that responded to us when we reached out and asked for stories about the Corn Palace, one was Jan Quinzer, who retired from her education position, worked at the Corn Palace for a number of years, and says, if people ever find out you're from Mitchell, well, they automatically make that Corn Palace connection.
Generally right away. I'll just say, you know, I'm from Mitchell, South Dakota. In fact, I'll tell you about this story. This is fun. We were in Portland, Oregon, and one of our grandbabies was baptized. And, of course, the grandparents go on up with the family, and they asked where we were from, and I said, I'm from Mitchell, South Dakota. And immediately I said, and the home of the Corn Palace. And people said, oh, I've been there. So that was really, yes, it kind of comes in. Because people identify Mitchell with the palace. And so if you tell them you're from Mitchell, you automatically tell them the palace is here.
Well, I guess it's working then, Larry Rohr, isn't it? You can go anywhere in the country and make that connection for people.
You know, I've been to different events at the Corn Palace through the years, and spending a little time there when we were shooting video there a couple of weeks ago, I learned a lot more, and I was particularly interested in the Harvey Dunn Gallery upstairs, or the Oscar Howe Gallery, excuse me, Oscar Howe, who actually designed several of the murals for several years after World War II until the early 70s. And you can see how he did that and how the different themes came together. And a lot of fun things to see if you're going to an event or if you're in Mitchell, make sure you get downtown and take a tour through the palace. It was a lot of fun.
All right. The April edition of Dakota Life premieres on Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain on SDPB Channel 1. You can find more stories online at sdpb.org/Dakota Life. Larry Rohr, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laurie. Take care.
Sports and Recreation Reporting is supported by Horton Incorporated of Britton, South Dakota.
Now, the springtime athletic events are taking shape in South Dakota. Joining us with an update, we have SDPB Sports and Recreation reporter, Nate Wack. Hey, Nate, welcome back.
Hey, Laura. Hi, Lori. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's starting to feel like spring out there, though a little bit windy. Tell us, and you know, we're cruising toward the end of a school year as well. Tell us where we're at for high school athletics.
Yeah, it kind of hit me this week. I know we get done with all of the winter sports and activities and all that kind of stuff. So we get to, I'm still kind of coming off that basketball high a little bit. And I look at the calendar on Monday and I go, I feel like there was something important that started on March 29th, but I can't remember what it is. And of course, I didn't mark it in my personal calendar, so I knew it wasn't anything like that. But I go and look, I'm like, oh, yeah. Golf started practice today, and golf is the last sport. It's always the final. It's the state golf championships in the spring are the first Monday and Tuesday in June. So it's the final thing that kind of ends the school year as far as sports and activities go, and it's the last sport to start off their practices. So it's kind of cool that we have track meets starting this week. We've got the golfers and stuff like that. As you mentioned, it is very windy in certain areas of the state, so a day like today might actually improve my golf swing on certain occasions because I am that off at times. But yeah, I just think it's cool. And I took a moment this week and I just said, man, do you remember where we were in the middle of August? Do you remember some of those conversations that we were having? You know, there was times where people would ask, what do you think of football? And I was like, if we make it past Labor Day, I'll actually be surprised because I don't know how this is going to work. And, now here we're sitting, and I know we still have, 2 months to go yet before the end of the school year and stuff like that. But, I mean, the spring stuff is kicking off, and so far, for the most part, everything is on as scheduled. The biggest glaring thing that I've seen to this point, really as far as any of the spring sports are concerned at the high school level, is there is a slight change with the Howard Wood Dakota Relays this year. And that change is that there's going to be no college, no middle school, or no Special Olympic events, but all high school is going to be a go. So it's basically the Howard Wood Relays, as everybody knows it, except it's only going to be that high school division for this spring.
Now, did we have Howard Wood Relays last year? I don't remember.
Last year was kind of that. Yeah, last year was that time where, all these spring sports that I'm now looking at, I'm like, man, it feels like it's been a long time since I paid attention to some of this stuff. That's because it's been 2 years, since I paid attention to it. It was last year where there was discussions of, track could probably still work. We could do it outside and stuff like that and all that. It kept kicking the can. Everything kept getting pushed down the road further until eventually it kind of got its legs taken off from under it. And so, yeah, it's kind of cool to see that, hey, there are track meets happening this week. There's people that are getting out, and you see some of the boys' tennis teams and stuff like that that are starting to
you know, get ready as well. And just to see that kind of thing, yeah, I think to me it's cool, just because, like you mentioned, this is something we didn't have last year. But yeah. I think it's cool to a lot of people around the state. You know, you think of track and golf, you know, think of just those two sports alone. Think of how many kids participate in those two sports. It's a lot of kids that are involved in them.
Tennis too, right, in the spring?
Yeah, yes, yes, yep.
Okay,
yep. So it's boys tennis that's in the – boys tennis is in the spring. Girls tennis is always in the fall. So and with golf too, when I say spring golf, just to clarify, it's the three girls of – it's the three classes of girls golf, and then B-boys golf is always in the spring with the three girls classes. So in the fall, you have two classes of boys golf that are in the fall always. And last year too, they had an event in June where they actually had a bunch of senior golfers get together out in Pier to kind of have like a senior showcase type of thing. That was obviously exhibition oriented, and it was put on by the South Dakota Golf Association and not the High School Activities Association.
So let me ask you this: now that you've been following, sports throughout the pandemic, some athletes have lost an opportunity that they'll maybe never, really get back, and that's just the way it might be for them. Others have gone forward without a hitch. But I'm wondering about teams and building, because there's, you're recruiting freshmen or first-year students. You're trying to build that team, and it seems like the impact of the pandemic for high school teams across the state could be ongoing as well.
Yeah, and I think you do bring up an interesting point. And I think we've seen, I don't want to say we've necessarily, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of we've seen the pandemic work at different speeds throughout the state, but we've seen, for instance, like the Sioux Falls School District react differently than, say, a more rural school district that might be on the western side of the state. And part of that is because there's more kids. Part of it is because, we remember what happened last March, and we saw like how Minnehaha, Lincoln County, and how the cases, were skyrocketing and stuff like that. So I think that also has kind of played a little bit of a role in some of this too. For instance, even going to basketball, look at the girls AA tournament that was at the Sanford Pentagon. There was attendance restrictions at the Sanford Pentagon when, if you're in Huron, there are still some restrictions, but it's not near the amounts. There might be some fans that wanted to go to the AA girls tournament in Sioux Falls and maybe weren't given the opportunity to go, but had their kid or school been competing in Class B, where there was different venue restrictions and things like that, it would have worked for them to be able to go. So I mean, I think there are still people that are being affected by it when it comes to sports. The Dakota Relays, there's two tickets
very quickly
per entry.
So still some limitations for families and athletes, which really impacts those families as they're trying to, stay healthy, but then also see their, students' final year, maybe ever, in some of these competitions. SDPB's Nate Weck, sports and recreation reporter, thanks for being here today, Nate. We appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Laurie.